It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On the last edition of What's News, I told you that the Republicans' plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act was dead for now. And today, I get to say it again, for now. After TrumpCare 3.0 was effectively killed by simultaneous tweets from Senators Mike Lee and Jerry Moran, Mitch McConnell regrouped and decided to go back to a strategy they had already decided against, repeal the bill and delay it for 2 years to give them time to come up with a replacement. Susan Collins of Maine, who voted against that same measure in 2015, was the first to say, no.
I'm going to oppose the motion to proceed. I voted against this approach in 2015, and I do not think that it is going to be constructive.
Two of her female colleagues soon agreed, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska.
Senator, where are you on the motion to proceed on this repeal and then replace?
I'm not there. An indefinite hold on this just creates more chaos and confusion.
But others are showing signs of wanting this nightmare to end already. Bill Cassidy.
We have to kind of play that through, and I'm still playing it through.
Roy Blunt.
My guess is we're now headed toward normal committee activity that will take 60 votes on the floor.
Rob Portman.
I'm concerned about something that would simply repeal and its impact on costs and choices in healthcare.
Rather than admitting it's time to start over and work in a bipartisan manner to fix the system we have, the president metaphorically threatened to hold his breath until his face turns blue.
I think we're probably in that position where we'll just let Obamacare fail. We're not going to own it. I'm not going to own it. I can tell you the Republicans are not going to own it. We'll let Obamacare fail, and then the Democrats are going to come to us and they're going to say, how do we fix it? How do we fix it? Or how do we come up with a new plan? I'm certainly disappointed. For 7 years, I've been hearing repeal and replace from Congress, and I've been hearing it loud and strong. And then when we finally get a chance to repeal and replace, they don't take advantage of it. So that's disappointing. So I'm very, I would say I'm disappointed in what took place. It will go on and we'll win. We're going to win on taxes. We're going to win on infrastructure and lots of other things that we're doing. But the way I look at it is in 18, we're going to have to get some more people elected. We have to go out and we have to get more people elected that are Republican.
And proved once again that he has no clue how any of this works.
We have 52 people. We had four no's. Now, we might have had another one somewhere in there, but essentially the vote would have been pretty close to, if you look at it, 48-4. That's a pretty impressive vote by any standard.
Bernie Sanders gave credit to all who stood up to this travesty.
It is a victory for the American people who stood up by the millions, Ari, in town meetings and rallies, who bombarded Capitol Hill with emails and phone calls and said that, you know what, we're not going to allow 22 million Americans to be thrown off of health insurance. We're not going to see premiums for older workers doubling. We're not going to defund Planned Parenthood. We're not going to cut Medicaid by $800 billion. We're not going to make it almost impossible for people with pre-existing conditions to get affordable health care. It's a victory for the American people and all of those, all of us, who believe that we have got to move toward a health care for all system, that health care is a right of all people, not a privilege.
But he warned there's a long road ahead. Stay vigilant, as Mitch McConnell has promised he's not done yet. A vote on a repeal and delay bill could come as early as next week to get senators on the record. Just when you thought you had heard all about the big Trump-Putin meeting at the G20, comes another bombshell. Another hour-long one-on-one at the big closing dinner. Ian Bremmer explained to Rachel Maddow.
So I don't know if we should call it a meeting. What we should do is say it's a dinner. Mm-hmm. The dinner was 3.5 hours long, very long. Not everyone that was supposed to attend actually showed up. There were a number of empty seats. And about halfway through the dinner, Trump gets up, goes around the table, sits down next to Putin, and begins this conversation. Everyone that was there, this was in full view of all of these heads of state and their spouses, and it was very animated. It was extremely friendly. There was certainly a lot of hand motion going on between the two leaders, the two presidents, but no one knows what they were out of earshot. So, I mean, unless the Russian translator has a tape, and I think there's a probably reasonably likelihood that he does, then, you know, nobody else is going to have a readout of this meeting.
And it gets worse.
The fact that you would have this kind of a meeting in front of all of these leaders, the first G20 summit that Trump himself had attended, with American allies already unnerved that their relationship, their private bilaterals, their phone calls with President Trump leads them worrying, can we really count on the United States in terms of NATO, security, global trade, climate, values, you name it, to then show that by far his best personal relationship is actually with a country that many of them considered to be an antagonist, and at least until Trump became president, the United States did as well. That's exceptionally unusual. It's disconcerting for American allies around the world. And it's certainly, I mean, despite the fact that Trump apparently just tweeted that it's fake news, it's a real story.
And that's a bit of What's News for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these segments and The Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. We are 100% listener funded, and we can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.